So glad that you're with us, and in just a couple of moments, we're going to turn our attention to a message in our series we're calling Unleashed, and we're coming down the home stretch of this series here. But before we do that, Pastor Jimmy is here with me, and we have one of our great events that is right around the corner. It's called Serve South Ogden.
That's what we're doing this year. We're doing Serve South Ogden. What that is from August 9th to the 13th. We have the opportunity to paint currently 17 homes that we've picked. So we're going to be painting homes, putting in decks, putting in fences, cleaning yards, zero scaping. We're always going to be on a tractor. You can pray for all of us, okay?
Watch your back.
Yeah, I know. So it is just like one of the most exciting events we do. Pre-COVID, we would have about 500 to 700 people show up for that week. So you can sign up in the card. There'll be a card right in front of you, you can see. And we just need to know the signups. If you're available for one day, all week, whatever you can do, bring the kids. We feed you. We have a blast. It is a party. It is such a good party. And the community down there is so excited we're coming because we were there 2 years ago. And now they're like, you're coming back?
And we're even doing a block party one night, right?
We're doing a block party on Thursday night. Costa Vida is feeding us on Wednesday. So it's all lined up. All we need is the people, because Roy really doesn't want to paint these homes by himself, okay? It's just how it is.
Thank you, Jimmy.
No, so if you can take that card in front of you, just fill it out sometime today and just drop it in the box. It'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, man. So let's turn our attention to the message for today. And we have been in a letter in the New Testament called Galatians, where the Apostle Paul has been writing people who have been led in the direction to think this, and this is just something that was not true 2,000 years ago, but has been true over and over again in this day and many in between, where we come to the conclusion that, hey, if we want to be in a relationship with God, it is to some degree, maybe a great degree, maybe a little degree, it's up to me. And so there were some teachers who came to people that Paul loved very much, and they said, we'll give you all the rules that Paul did not tell you. He told you how to get started with the grace of God and what Jesus did for you, but now it's up to you, and now you need to get busy. Let me jump back to a story that took place almost exactly 20 years ago. John Abruzzo is alive today because his friends literally carried him. Almost 20 years ago, the events of 9/11 played out, and John Abruzzo was in the South Tower. And when the first plane struck the North Tower, all of a sudden everybody knew it was time to get out. And John Abruzzo had struggled with that because they shut the elevators down. And due to a diving accident when he was 17 years old, John Abruzzo was a quadriplegic. And he knew he could not take his motorized wheelchair down 69 flights of stairs. And so he came to the conclusion, well, this is probably it. Can't leave here. And as people were evacuating the building, 8 of his coworkers, 7 men and 1 woman, realized John's situation, and the call was for everybody to get out as fast as you can, and likely that would mean saving their lives, but they kind of looked at each other and they realized, we can't just leave. So one person went and looked for one of those emergency, you know, straight boards, emergency stretchers, and they found one. And John's 6'4", 250 pounds. And they put him on that stretcher, and they shared that load, and they began to walk down 69 flights of stairs. As they were doing that, hundreds of people streamed past them, running for their lives, firefighters going in the other direction. Nobody stopped to help them who was heading down. An hour later, they got to the 20th floor, and that's when the plane hit their tower. And all of a sudden, everything went dark, and in the pitch black, they continued to walk down those stairs. And when they came out the front doors, the first responders who were there were amazed that anybody was still in the building. And the only thing that they heard was, run for your lives. And more like a fast walk, they carried John down to a church down the street where a lot of people were taking shelter. 10 minutes at the most after that, the tower collapsed. John Abruzzo is alive today because his friends carried him. Why do we share that story? Here is what Paul says in the middle of the passage we're going to look at. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Now, if you've been with us for this series, you might wonder, and maybe the first reaction to it is, hey, Paul, haven't you been spending so much of your time arguing against the law? You've been saying it's not about the law, that it's about grace, and now you're talking about the law of Christ. Why would you bring law when you've been arguing so hard against it? What is the law of Christ? And there's nowhere in the New Testament that it says, and the law of Christ is, but what many have come to believe, and I would agree with this, is that one day Jesus was asked, what is the greatest law of all? Net it out for us. What's the bottom line? And Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love God with everything you got, inside of you, around you. And then he said, the second one is just like it. Doesn't sound like it. He says, love your neighbor as yourself. And so now Paul is contrasting the law of Moses and the 600 and some rules that existed of how you can make it into God's good graces. And he says, no, when you bear one another's burdens, you know what you're doing? You're loving God and you're loving your neighbor as yourself. That is the law of Christ. And that's not a list of rules, right? And that, in the brilliance that is Jesus, when are we done with that? Is that like, oh, I can check that one off the list? No, that one is just there every day and in every relationship. And here's the distinction that I think Paul is really trying to help us to understand. Religion asks the question, what does the law require? What's the rule? What do I need to do? And sometimes I've actually had people ask me this question, hey, if I do this, am I sinning? Am I across the line? Which I interpret sometimes as people saying, I really want to sin, but I think I found a loophole that will keep me safe from being across that line there. You know, what does the law require? What is the rule? Maybe how close can I camp to the line without crossing it? And Paul's inviting us to ask this question. What does love require? What does loving God or loving my neighbor, what does that look like? And what would that ask of me in any and every situation? Now, when you hear about love, I don't know about you, but sometimes it feels just strange to me because we can turn that into something ooey gooey and really nondescript, and it means that we just kind of have to go along with everything. And maybe some of you are old enough to remember that once there was a summer of love, you know, that included stuff like this, and people were just tripping out on love, and everything was great, and, you know, just don't mess with me, and I won't mess with you. And that's not what Paul is talking about. Now, sometimes love is tough, and sometimes love asks the hard questions. Sometimes love confronts. Sometimes love encourages. Sometimes love just simply meets a need. And after arguing against, trying to think that there's any way, shape, or form that we can work our way into God's good graces, now Paul is going to take us into the application area of how do we make this real in our relationships? And boy, relationships are hard, aren't they? And so Paul's going to identify some things that I think ring real true here. First, he's going to show us the issue in our relationships, and then he's going to help us try to figure out how we can move forward in that. What's the core issues in our relationships? Here's what he says, Galatians 5:26, let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. And there is so much in this very short passage here, but let's break it down just a little bit. You see the word conceited? And we might think, well, that's just somebody who's arrogant, but you know, there's some meaning here that's really important for us to unpack. That word in some of the older translations was translated vainglory. And that's a really good literal definition of what this is, but that's not how we talk, and so that doesn't mean a whole lot for us when we think of vainglory or empty glory. But here's why that's important, because that word actually comes from something that means empty of glory. That in this life, a lot of times when we think about who we are, we think of how we matter, right? And when something matters, it has some weight to it, it has some meaning to it, it has some substance to it. And what Paul is telling us is that there is this human condition where when we look at ourselves, we wonder, does my life matter? And we are searching for that meaning and that value and that purpose. And when we don't find it, it's like this glory vacuum. And out of that, when we feel like we don't matter, we can go to work in all kinds of different ways trying to prove that, yes, I do, yes, I do. Look at what I have done. Look at what I have accomplished. And so what does it mean to be empty of glory? It leads to a deep insecurity, leading to a need to prove my worth. And so I go to work, and I try really hard in one way or another to demonstrate my life matters. I matter. There's value, there's substance, there's meaning. I feel empty, vain of glory. I want to quote somebody here, and I want to read this quote because I think she really understands this whole issue, and this makes her, I don't know, just a normal human being who wrestles with this very thing. I'm not going to tell you who it is to the end because I think it can cloud a little bit of this. But she says, I have an iron will, and here's why. I'm struggling with fear. I push past one spell of it and discover myself as a special human being. Then I get to another stage, and I think I'm mediocre and uninteresting. And then I find a way to get myself out of that again and again. And again, my drive in life is from the horrible fear of being mediocre. That's what's always pushing me, because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove to myself that I'm somebody. My struggle has never ended, and I don't think it ever will. And that is exactly what Paul is saying is a human issue that plays itself out in relationships all the time. I'm working to make sure that everybody, including myself, knows that my life matters. And so what do? Maybe I feel like I'm in competition with you. Maybe I work so that I feel superior to you. Maybe I feel inferior to you, so I try even harder. And I can live with this ongoing sense of restlessness. And you know who said this, by the way? Madonna. Somebody who's made it in a lot of ways, and this is a little glimpse into her soul, and I think she exposes humanity in a very powerful way. What does it mean to be conceited? Empty of glory. And that can lead in one of two different ways, either provoking or envying. So let's talk about that. First, provoking is the idea of looking down on somebody out of superiority, right? So if I'm trying to prove that my life matters, and maybe I feel like I'm doing better than you, and so now I put myself in a position of superiority over you, and sometimes I'll even call you out, and I'll make sure that you know in one way or another that I feel better than you or feel like I'm ahead of you, but it looks down on somebody, believing that, you know what, I'm doing more, I'm doing better. My life matters more than yours. And then there's also the word envying. And envying is one that we're probably a little bit more familiar with. This is the other direction, right? So my life, I'm not sure that it matters. And now I feel like everybody else is doing so much better than I do. And so now I'm looking up at other people. And I'm doing that out of a feeling of inferiority. And I want my life to matter, and it seems like everybody else is doing better, and their lives matter more. And so what am I going to do about that? And so to become conceited and to prove that my life has meaning can take me to superiority, it can take me to inferiority. And I got to tell you, I've experienced a little bit of both of that. Can I just, you know, have a little bit of a moment of confession with you that when I'm not here and my wife and I are traveling, we go to other churches and visit other churches when we're there on vacation, whatever the case might be. And I got to tell you, you know, when the service is over there, especially in light of what I do, I will evaluate the service. And there have been times where inside of myself I've thought, I could do better than that. You call that a sermon? Here's all the places where you're wrong and you should have done, you know, things differently. But then there's also the converse of that, that sometimes I'll hear somebody speak and I'll go, wow, I could never do that. I should just quit what I'm doing, should go work at Cold Stone Creamery, just mixing all those awesome things together there, because I could never do that, and I could never be that awesome. And I don't know if you've ever wrestled with that, but my guess is what Paul's talking about here is a human condition, that in one way or another, we've known about this. We've experienced it. And I want to show you a column that was put together by somebody named Tim Keller. And by the way, if you're looking for a resource on Galatians, I'd recommend his book, Galatians for You, and that's where these columns come from. But if you lean in the provoking direction, you have a superiority mindset, you tend to blow up when anybody comes at you, because after all, who are you talking to? You're talking to me. You pick arguments, can judge harshly other people, you can attack when criticized, and kind of this mindset of saying, you know what, I would never do anything that stupid. Can you believe they did that? And then on the other side, when we're envying, more of an inferiority mindset, rather than attacking and blowing up, we tend to clam up because we just don't think, I don't even have the right to speak here. We avoid confrontation, we're intimidated around certain people, we're discouraged and defensive, and we would say, I could never be that awesome. And I think in laying bare the heart of humanity, Paul aims at something that plays itself out so often in our relationship. And great, Paul, on some way, maybe we've never thought of it that way. What do we do about it? How do we make that right? So let's talk about the solution in relationships. Here's what Paul said in Galatians 5:25. If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. This is right leading into the section we're looking at. And Tammy Higginson did such a great job last week talking about the Spirit and being in a relationship with the Spirit. And this step by step has the idea of living every day, that we just recognize who we are, where we came from, that we are not in a relationship with God because we've earned it. We were undeserving and unable to accomplish that, but God in His grace and His mercy invited us into that. And one of the keys to this, I believe, is preaching the gospel to ourselves every day, saying, I don't belong to God because that's how good I am or what I've done. It's because God has loved me, and I'm just somebody rescued by God's grace. And when we live in that day by day, that changes a lot of our perspective. Because all of a sudden, I'm not earning anything. I'm not in competition with you. I'm not superior to you. I'm not inferior to you. The grace of God has come to us all. And if that is the case, and we recognize this on a day-by-day basis, you know what that means? That when I find my glory, my meaning, my value, not in who I am and the things that I've accomplished, but instead in Jesus' value of me, I'm free to love other people. Because I don't have to prove anything. And I'm not working for anything, and I'm not earning anything. God has given His grace. And so I'm free, free to love. And it also means that only grace can make you bold without pride and humble without self-loathing. Because a lot of times when we feel good and we feel superior, that's just a pride issue. That somehow I want to feel above you. But on the other side of that, when I envy you, there's an issue of I'm just not good enough. And grace corrects both of those ways in which that glory vacuum can take us. Does my life matter? God says, yes, it does. And I came to this earth for you. I died on a cross for you, rose again from the dead for you. When we find our meaning and value in that, it changes so much of what can happen in our relationships. So how do we make that real? Let's apply that to real life. Galatians 6:1. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. The word for restore literally was used for setting a broken bone. And I don't know, how many of you, by show of hands, how many of you have had a broken bone here? Wow, this is a crazy crowd in here. Anybody two or more, you know, broken bones there? I've had seven in my life. Not that I'm competitive or anything, or that I want to feel superior to you, but I've had seven broken bones. And I don't know if you've ever gone through that experience. How do you reset that? For the most part, it's pretty gentle. And the idea that Paul is trying to help us understand here is that there's a restoration process that is described by gentleness. That when somebody has fallen, somebody is hurt, how do you bring them back? It's like setting a broken bone. And that takes some time, and it takes some gentleness, and it takes a little bit of skill. But again, you know what we're not given? We're not given a list. And here are the 9 things you need to do in order to check that off the list. It's just one of those relational components that's there all the time. So one is to restore the fallen. Here's another: bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And this just simply means to help the hurting, to help them. And what that means is that sometimes you might need to carry them for a bit. There was a story on ABC News about that very thing that I want to show you by way of video here. When we think of that, we think, yeah, you know, that's just kind of an interesting thing. It sounds really good. It sounds really great. What does that look like in real life? Check out this story.
The finish line was so close, but something stopped Melanie Bailey in her tracks.
I see this girl and she's limping. She's crying her eyes out. And I'm like, are you okay? And she said, no.
A competitor, Danielle Lanoux, was down with a knee injury.
I was just sobbing. And all of a sudden this girl comes up and she grabs my arm. She said, here, come on. Couldn't walk at all. And so she said, here, hop on my back. And she bent down, picked me up. She's like half my size.
The photo says it all. Melanie, exhausted, hoists Danielle onto her back and carries her all the way to medics. Tired, it was a struggle to get there. The girls didn't say a word to each other.
What are the other runners doing?
They passed by.
Why did you stop?
It was the right thing to do. I mean, I'm not going to just leave somebody there. I would feel even worse if I just finished with not leaving her, knowing that she was there crying in pain.
Once strangers, arch rivals even, now friends.
So nice. I mean, like, she didn't have to do that. How many people kept running past me, but she decided she was going to stop.
How can you say that you beat somebody when you had an unfair advantage?
Melanie finished almost 8.5 minutes behind the first place runner. It was her worst time ever, but it didn't matter. She won.
They take a medal home, but I take home a medal in my heart. I feel really good about what I did. I can look back on this forever and say, hey, I did that. Somebody got a medal, but I got a different kind of medal.
Melanie tells me she wants to be a physical therapist. I think she's off to a really good start.
How do you define winning in relationships? And sometimes it can look like that. We carry someone else's burden. And that's what Paul tells us fulfills the law of Christ, is that that's not just a good idea. It's not just something that we think about and something that we understand. It is something that we can apply to the relationships we all have. And because the issue is pride that works against us, because we want our lives to matter, when we truly understand the grace of God that has come to our rescue, it allows us to not be superior, but rather to be more forgiving. Because after all, I'm somebody who's been forgiven. And it allows us to be less insecure. Because after all, the grace of God has been given to me so freely. And so, when we think about the question for every relational moment, what is it that could help us, no matter what the situation, no matter what the scenario, no matter who the person, Could it be that this question in real life moments would help us? What does love require of me? What does it look like in this moment with this person in this situation? What does love require? An open-ended, ongoing, lifelong question that can help us to respond to the grace of God that takes away the issue of pride, that can help us overcome our insecurities and help us to know I'm loved by God and I'm called to love. What does that look like? I'm going to invite you to bow your heads together with me. And I wonder, have you understood that it is purely, simply, 100% the grace of God that makes us right with Him? There is nothing we can do to earn God's favor. He simply gives it. And He invites us to trust that and to trust that alone. And the instant we do that, we belong to Him. And He receives us because the work has already been done. It's not up to me. It's not up to you. And Lord Jesus, thank you for the love that you show us. And God, help us to understand how that allows us to overcome many of the issues that we all wrestle with and battle inside of ourselves. And God, may the application of that flow into our relationships. And God, it's so easy to respond and react out of who we naturally, instinctively are inside of ourselves. But God, if we have come to embrace your love and your grace, help us to remember the question, what does love require of me? Because I've been loved by the God of the universe. Now, how can I respond in a way that makes that real here and now with this person who's in front of me? And God, may anything that comes of that, may it just point to you, may it simply honor you, and may it help us to just grow closer to you day by day and realize how it's really about your great love for us. It changes everything, everything inside of us and around us. And so lead us in that direction, God, where we increasingly honor you with the life that we live. And thank you for so much grace and goodness along the way. And we ask and we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.